Thanks, everybody.
The Bears.
You're listening to the best of the Bears.
He's in for the touchdown. And the Chicago Bears have taken the lead.
A weekly mix of 670 The Score's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Did you know that Troy Aikman in only 6 years has passed for 16,303 yards?
Do you know bees and dogs can smell fear?
Troy Aikman.
Troy had all the baddest girls in the world at the time, all the country music girls. I was like, man, come on, man.
Pro Football Hall of Fame.
I played professional football. That I was able to do so with so many great players and coaches and win three world championships and wind up here today with all these great men in gold jackets, well, it's almost too much to believe. I am humbled to be welcomed to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and I thank you.
Six-time Pro Bowl quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys.
Now we got a championship game. This is what it's all about. The losing team is out. The winning team goes to the Super Bowl.
Aikman quickly. The pass to Harper. Harper off to the races.
That was a heck of a call. That was a heck of a throw by Troy Aikman. And here's Dave Wannstedt right here, and he gets to relax down there now. He's had the number one defense all year. But doggone it, you've got to get to the Super Bowl, too, and they did that.
Three-time Super Bowl champion.
Oh, Troy Aikman. Aikman's previous two Super Bowls, over 70% completion rate, a record for the Super Bowl. 27-17. Again.
Super Bowl MVP.
Troy Aikman, you and the Dallas Cowboys just won the Super Bowl. What are you going to do next?
I'm going to Disney World!
Analyst for Monday Night Football.
There's not a lot of positives, and Bears fans know it, but Kyler Gordon is one of them, and I've enjoyed watching him in the year that he's had. He's one of the better nickel corners that I've seen in the league.
Troy Aikman with Spiegel and Holmes.
It's always been Roy. I didn't think Troy could get shortened, but but it did, yeah.
On 670 The Score.
On Monday night, he will be with our friend Joe Buck calling Bears Vikings. It's the Spiegel and Holmes Show. Dave Wannstedt here with us, courtesy of Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape. Troy Aikman now joining us here on The Score. Troy, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you for having me.
Hey, Troy. Dave here. Hey, you know, I want our listeners here to appreciate how much I do and we do having you come on. I'm sitting in my house 2 hours ago, and who's on ESPN TV? Troy. I walk out, and Tony's the same guy that I asked him if he watched the Netflix series, and he said, why would I do that, Troy? Okay, you know, Tony. He says, why would I watch that? And he went on to something else. But I walk out, and he says, Troy, he's in New York visiting his brother. He said, I just listened to Troy on Mad Dog. And now here he is with us in Chicago. So
we're very appreciative, Troy.
We appreciate it, Troy, much. But
absolutely. Been a busy day for sure.
Hey, a question, you know, obviously with the game, and the number one topic here is Caleb Williams. We all know that. With all your quarterback experience and doing games and watching quarterbacks all shapes and sizes and years, what would be a positive night in your mind? Year two, Caleb Williams going out there Monday night, where you could walk away and say, you know what, that was a good night for him. What would you, how would you kind of put that into football terms?
You know, it's a good question. It's a hard one to answer before you get into the game. I don't know that short of winning that anyone walks out feeling good, but yet I also know that there are those circumstances where you do come out of a ball game, even in defeat, and you say, wow, we showed some things and this is something we can build on. But I think, Dave, just based on what I've seen of them in the preseason, obviously a new play caller, new head coach, different system, really both sides of the ball, what that might look like. But I think for Caleb, it's really handling – just the mechanics of the position and operating within the offense. I know pre-snap penalties, things of that nature have been a bit of an issue. They had a lot of penalties last year as well.
Yep.
Cleaning a lot of that up. you know, I've talked about it on some of these shows that I've been on. On the one hand, you've got Caleb, who's played against this Minnesota defense. He had some success last year against them. And so he has that to build on, but then he'll be doing it within a framework of a different offense, one that I think should be more quarterback friendly and should give him an opportunity to have more consistency and a higher level of success as he moves through the year. But nevertheless, it is going to be a challenging ball game for them. But how he handles all of there's so much that goes into playing quarterback and playing it at a really high level. And a lot of it goes beyond just being able to simply throw a football. And so I think probably from my perspective, you know, what does all of that look like? And does this look like an offense that's going to be competitive and something that we really haven't seen a lot of offensively from the Chicago Bears in quite some time.
Troy, you kickstarted an education for us and our listeners last year on this show when you talked about wanting Caleb to be under center more. And we have seen him under center in training camp, and we've realized how that is so necessary to allow the run game to do what it does. And now the pass game obviously works off that. And you look at the Detroit offense the last 3 years, and everybody gets to eat. Everybody gets yards, and everything can work out when it does that. Is Caleb going to be smart enough early in the season to do what a Jared Goff has to do at a line of scrimmage for Ben Johnson in kind of deciding where to attack and kind of what play to go? Like we're excited to see him under center. We're excited to see the run game, but I don't know if he's going to be psychologically ready from the get-go to do everything he's got to do.
Well, I think from the one standpoint that there has been, and it's natural. I know when Norv Turner came to Dallas in my third year, everybody wanted our offense to look like the LA Rams and Jim Everett, and it wasn't realistic. And I don't know that the expectations are realistic as we go into this season based on, you know, Jared Goff had been in the league 5 years. He'd been to a Super Bowl. He'd been to a couple Pro Bowls. And so his maturation and his level of understanding what defenses were doing and what was required of the position was vastly different. And he had played at a different level, of course, than what Caleb has in just his first year. And I think there are going to be a lot of similarities. It's you don't completely overhaul the system, but you try to make it fit with the personnel that you have. Now, you know, when I talked about last year Caleb being under center, it really probably had less to do with the run game, although there are a lot more options on what you're capable of doing within the run game when you do have a quarterback under center. But my reason for saying that last year was just to try to speed him up. And I think a lot of these quarterbacks that come out of college, there's not a real sense of urgency, and there's also not a real sense of timing in the way in which they throw the football. And we've seen the pendulum swing a little bit in the league to where we're seeing more offenses, really the whole Sean McVay tree, whether it's Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota, Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan. And then of course, what we've seen of Ben Johnson in Detroit, you're seeing run games married more with the play action game. And that was a big part of my success as a quarterback and our Cowboys teams. And so I think by putting him under center, running some play action, it forces him to just throw more on schedule and not have to rely so much on the off schedule plays that he's effective with. But I just don't know how you can make a living in the NFL if you don't have a sense of timing and the receivers aren't expecting the football to come out at a certain time. And we saw it last year, 68 sacks that Caleb took. And I'm a firm believer that, yes, when you get sacked a lot, usually the offensive line has a role in that. But typically I view the sack totals as a quarterback stat more so than an offensive line. And if you're a quarterback, I've seen it from Tom Brady over the years when he didn't have an offensive line and just simply refused to take a sack. You know, sack in so many ways is basically you might as well punt the football. You're not going to overcome it and pick up a first down. Not a turnover, but certainly kind of kills a drive. So there's got to be a sense for a quarterback that you're not going to take negative plays and you're not going to take sacks. And so that number has to improve dramatically. It should, one, because he's in his second year, but then also the improvements in the offensive line and the fact that Ben Johnson's going to be running a passing game that's not going to rely on on Caleb Williams running around as much as he had to a year ago.
Hey, Troy, the other thing with this game that obviously that's a topic is the Brian Flores big pressure blitz defense. And, you know, there's an old coaching thing we used to always say, you know, and this is kind of a two-part question for you, get your thoughts on, that let's pressure the old bad ones and pressure the new ones, the young ones, quarterbacks, that is, and then cover versus the real good ones. You know, that was kind of, but, you know, but I remember, like Kansas City, when Matt Nagy was here, he wanted five out regardless of who the quarterback was. Or if it was blitz, get five out and get the ball off. And I can remember when Norv was with me at the Dolphins, we went down and played the Cowboys, on a Thursday night game, Thanksgiving Day. And Norv came in, and I was doing the defensive thing, and he was doing the offense, and he came in, and he says, I said, hey, what's this Zimmer defense? Cowboys were number one in the NFL in blitz at that time. And he says, here's what I'm thinking. He says, I'm thinking that we're going to run one receiver routes and keep everybody in a block. I says, oh, really? I says, oh, okay, if you think it'll work, And we went out there. And Chris Chambers from Wisconsin, local kid here, was our only, and we ran a lot of routes with one receiver, and we kept the tight ends and the fullback, everybody in the block, and Jay Fiedler was our quarterback, and we beat him by two touchdowns, I think, that night, on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah.
Your thought process on pressuring the young quarterbacks, you think that's a big deal in today's football? And two, what's been your philosophy as far as getting guys out or protecting? What would you rather have?
I would tell you, for me, Dave, I preferred getting five guys out. I just felt like I would know where the blitz was coming, and if we couldn't pick it up, I give me some options where I know where I can get the ball out and get it to someone who's running open. And, you start trying to pack people in there and max protect, and then they show a look, but then they don't bring it. And if you're running one or two receiver routes, those guys better be pretty good at creating some separation. I think you can get really stuck. And I, as a quarterback who wasn't as mobile as a lot of these guys, I had to depend on my ability to just beat them with the football. But I think for this game with Caleb and what Brian Flores has shown, at least in Minnesota in prior years, is a little different from what he did in Miami. In Miami, he brought, a lot of the zero blitzes to where he had no safety in the middle of the field and would bring one more than you were able to protect. And how was a quarterback then going to handle that? What I've seen more, especially last year, was a lot of blitzing on early downs, first and second downs, but it seemed to me like he was doing that more for run fits and just trying to hold up against the run. And they did. They were a top five run defense last year. Teams just had a hard time moving the football on the ground. They vary the looks on third downs, but typically they were only rushing four most of the time because he wanted to protect his corners and not give up any big plays. And it was pretty effective. So I do think that as a quarterback, when you're playing against a coordinator like Flores, he brings so many different looks, and trying to sort that out and know who's coming and who's got who, and it can confuse you. And for a young quarterback like Caleb, who hasn't been exposed to a lot of those types of things, and especially now in week one playing within a new offensive system, I would imagine he'll test them especially early and see how he holds up to that. But, I know there's been a lot of people talking about what Ben Johnson did in Detroit and Jared Goff against Minnesota. They were able to hit some big plays against them at times. I'm sure that's what you'd like to do. And whether or not Chicago can take advantage of some of those opportunities, because there are some big plays to be had, we'll find out on Monday night. But that'll be the challenge for the Bears.
Hey, Troy, are the Packers the best team in the division now with Micah Parsons? I mean, what the hell, man? Bears fans are not pleased.
I like the Packers. I like the division in general. I mean, last year, gosh, to go like Minnesota, to go 14-3 and you don't even win the division. I mean, that tells you all you need to know. And so, but I do like the Packers. I believe that with the Lions, my question with the Lions is, of course, with losing their two coordinators, and that's important. I'm a big believer in coaching. I know how much it impacted my career and our teams. And we lost Dave after our first Super Bowl. We lost Norv after our second. And it just really wasn't ever quite the same. So you lose two guys in the same year. If anyone can hold it together, it's Dan Campbell. I got great appreciation for him. But that's going to be a challenge for the entire organization. But I do like the continuity of the Green Bay Packers. Matt LaFleur, what they do offensively, they've got a really good young team. And you know, Dave can relate to this, much like what Charles Haley was for us in 92 in giving us a legitimate – you know, pass rusher who could really change and tilt the outcome. Parsons certainly does that for a defense that really came on last year and played good football. But yeah, if I was picking right now as to who I like the best in that division, I would go with the Green Bay Packers. And this was even before Micah joined them, but now especially.
Troy, thank you so much for being gracious with your time. We really do learn a lot when you come on in Chicago. It's great having your perspective on what Caleb Williams is doing. And Joe Buck's our guy, so we love hearing you two guys continue to have that strong relationship on Monday Night Football. Thank you. Have a great call and rest your voice because you've been everywhere.
Hey, Troy, thanks, buddy.
I appreciate it. I'm excited to get to Chicago. I love that town and really looking forward to kicking off the year there this season.
All thanks, right. Troy.
Thanks, Troy. We'll talk, buddy.
You bet, guys.
Thank you.
It's Troy Aikman.
Yeah, man. The lots of great stuff in there.
Always fun to talk to Clay Harbor, and he is here in studio to talk it through with us. Clay, good morning. How you doing? Already worked out? Ready to go?
Yeah, worked out. Got my cold plunge in, you know, trying to make sure David's going to get his in later. But always a good way to start the day.
Yeah, it is. It's a good way to start the day. So tonight we start the season. And before we get to some of the Bears stuff, we made our predictions earlier in the show. I think Mully has the Eagles going to the Super Bowl, winning the NFC,
yes,
returning there, but
yes,
losing to the Ravens.
Yes.
What do you expect out of the Eagles tonight? Your former team, a team that is, I think, the model of consistency and also a model of how you build a team from the ball on out with Howie Roseman. What do you expect tonight and this season from the Eagles in the NFC?
I think Mully's a smart man. I think the Eagles are going to be good this year. Yes, the thing that you got to watch out for, Kellen Moore is no longer there. Obviously, we know he's in New Orleans with the Saints. You got Kevin Petullo taking over, but he's a guy that's on staff. He knows Jalen Hurts well. I think he's going to take over right where Kellen Moore left off. The Cowboys were 29th in rushing defense last year, including giving up 4.8 yards per carry, which was 28th. Give the ball to Saquon Barkley. I'm sorry, you've kept him out this preseason. You got Saquon Barkley there. I know Kenny Clark, you know, is no longer a Dallas Cowboy, or is a Dallas Cowboy, excuse me, and is going to stop the run now. But I don't think he's going to have that big impact that Jerry thinks he is. So I think you run the football. Your offensive line is intact. Everybody's healthy. There was a scare with Landon Dickerson early in the season. He's fine. Pro Bowl guard. You got Jordan Mailata. Obviously, he's a Pro Bowler. Lane Johnson, he's a Pro Bowler. Cam Jurgens, he's a Pro Bowler. Tyler Steen's a solid guard. He's just the only guy that's not a Pro Bowler. So they got an unreal offensive line. Best in the NFL, in my opinion. So for me, run the football, and then you can get the ball to your two stud receivers, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and David, they even got a tight end, Dallas Goedert. So I think it's going to be Eagles all day. We're going to hear a lot of the Fly Eagles Fly song.
Great.
Dallas, I don't know what they're doing. I do know that they are they're incredible in terms of the value of the franchise. They have they are worth over $12 billion, the highest valued franchise, and they bring in, and this is the big number, like $1.2 billion a year, something like that. A crazy amount of money that flies through that joint. But the decisions they make are mind-boggling. This latest decision is just, I don't understand it. And while it's great to say we're going to get 4 to 6 players now that we've lost Micah Parsons, you're not getting it this year, Jerry. So you're going to be impacted by that all season long, no doubt about it.
The stat that I thought sounded fake but is real in EPA per play. And I know we're big EPA guys now because of Ben Johnson came in and said the most important thing is EPA. What is EPA? I don't know. I guess it's important. Ben Johnson said it is. Defensively, when Micah Parsons was on the field the last 4 years, the Dallas Cowboys were number one in EPA per play defensively. When Micah Parsons was not on the field in Dallas, they were dead last in the NFL in EPA per play defensively.
That's a stunning difference.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I go, this can't be real. ESPN stat verified, unreal.
So when you look at, let's go to the Bears now, because yesterday we heard from Ben Johnson. You've been out there a lot during the training camp, and he mentioned and made a point of saying that he and Caleb Williams watching tape together, watching games together. With this offense coming out, Monday Night Football, so much attention paid to how different it will be and what they need to do. What are your expectations for the offense in general under Ben Johnson week one and Caleb Williams specifically?
I got high expectations, man. I think that being out at all these training camp practices, watching all the preseason games at first, man, I was a little worried. I'll be honest. Like, this isn't looking good. But you saw the steady growth in the pre-snap, the steady growth in Caleb decision-making, the growth in the offensive line. I think everybody has improved so much. And then you look at the success that Ben Johnson has had, obviously, against this system with Brian Flores, which has been really good. He's played him four times. He's 4-0, and he's averaging 30.5 points a game. But that's like, I'm sure you're like a NASCAR fan, David. I don't know, you come off as a NASCAR guy, right? So if a guy is really good in NASCAR and he switches cars, is he going to still be the best guy, or does it depend on the car?
Depends on the car.
Depends on the car. Yep. So now Ben Johnson's got a new car. Is he still going to be the best? I don't know. He knows how to win, but now he's got to show me he can do it with this new car that isn't the same one he had last year. But with him at the helm, a guy with his experience, his talent, play calling, the amount of detail that he has instilled in this team, I think you got to like the Bears' chances, and especially being a home dog in division. I think that's got to be motivating, too.
And when you talk about EPA, right, expected points added, that is impacted offensively by down and distance, by where what yard line you're on the field. So I think that as we look at him working with Caleb, you know, processing, getting the ball out, getting moving quickly, especially against a team like the Vikings that come at you in so many different directions. That is just in order for the process to work, you're going to have to do a really good job of kind of running plays where you feel the quarterback can get the ball out and can stay on time, and all the rest of it builds from there.
Absolutely. And people think because he had this high-powered offense that he was just slinging the ball down the field in Detroit, just bombs every play, Jared Goff's just No, Jared Goff was doing a ton of quick passes, quick throws, getting the ball to his athletes in space. We heard Ben Johnson talk about feeding his horses. It's keeping him up at night, right?
Yeah.
Here's a stat, another stat that I liked. Ben Johnson led the league, Mully, with 6 point yards per catch after the reception.
Yes.
So after somebody catches the football, they average 6.7 yards per catch in Detroit. He gets the ball to his players in space, gives them an opportunity to run with it. So you're staying ahead of the chains. People are like, 6.7 yards, that's not that much. That's dang near a first down if you catch the ball at 4 yards.
That's right.
That's a first down. So keeping the chains moving, staying out of these long down and distances against Brian Flores, that's when he confuses you. You got two guys, two linebackers standing in the A-gaps. You got a guy, a nickelback that's running in and out. You don't know if he's coming. And that's why cadence is important, too.
Yeah, because you talk about the yards after the catch. You talk about scheming guys open. But the little things can get in the way of bigger gains. And you saw during the course of training camp, Caleb Williams struggle initially with the operation, pre-snap, identifying, whatever the case may be. You want to avoid those things. You want to make sure that you master the pre-snap operation, the cadence. Why is that so important in this offense? And is it more important than most because of its complexity?
Oh, yeah. Either of you guys a Star Wars guy?
Sure, I've seen them all.
Yeah, yeah. It's like when Yoda told Luke, it's like you can't defeat Vader without the Force as your ally. All right? You know what the ally, the Force is? It's the cadence, David. And you know why? people think the cadence just means, all right, we're going to get somebody to jump off sides and steal 5 yards. To me, here's what I love the cadence for. If I was on a team, a veteran quarterback that had a good cadence, said, hot, 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 a team that's blitzing, guess what? They can't disguise anything. Yeah. They think the ball's about to be snapped. They're showing me exactly what they're doing. The guy that's blitzing's almost coming over the line of scrimmage. The other safety's bailing out because he knows he's got to get to the back half of the field. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm running my route on this guy. Offensive lineman is saying, okay, he's not coming. He's coming. So now we can shift a big on a big. We can get a linebacker, a running back on a linebacker or safety. It helps so much. And I talk about New England so much. I know I only had a cup of coffee there, maybe even a half a cup. I was there for 6 games, an entire offseason, though. But the stuff that they did with the cadence, so you could just see these little things and teach players, okay, pay attention when you go through that dummy cadence because they're trying to disguise something. They don't know if we're snapping the ball. They got to get back. If he's a safety and he's playing cover two, or if he's a middle of the field safety, they've got to show it because they got to be in position when the ball snapped.
I always wonder with cadence stuff, if you have a veteran offensive line, are guys more likely to be able to hold their water than if you're trying guys that aren't used to it? I mean, part of the discipline is, and listen, it's a huge aid for a team that wants to run a lot of play action because it can really, we know that if you look like you're running the football, that the linebackers are coming down and your tight ends are going to be in the middle of the field. You're going to really be able to take advantage of that. But I just wonder about, can that be a tricky thing to do if a guy isn't comfortable with cadence, hasn't done it before? Can you learn it overnight? How quickly do you become a good quarterback in terms of your cadence?
Firstly, being at home huge, yeah. Obviously, because you're not doing any silent count. You can have good cadence and silent count. I mean, the best teams, the veteran quarterbacks, the veterans offensive line, you're talking to the quarterback and saying, we are mixing up this silent count cadence. We are not going to be you getting beat off the snap. For me, my whole mindset when I was a veteran is snap count. That was it. When I'm blocking, snap count. I'm getting 2 feet in the ground before he gets one. I'm jumping the snap because of the cadence, the snap count. That's a part of it. But the other thing is, like I said, that dummy snap count, you will see what they're doing. Yes, when you're a veteran team, you're a veteran O-line, like the Bears are, you can utilize that. If you got rookies, they're a little bit nervous, you can see in their stance or maybe shaking a little bit, they got a big edge rusher coming off the edge, yeah, they're going to be more inclined to jump off sides. But you know what stops that? That's New England Bill Belichick. As soon as you flinched, you didn't even wait. You're running 800 meters around both fields. You wouldn't even wait for him to tell him to do it. Yeah. You jump off sides. Next thing you know, you just start running. Start running like he was running to Jordan Hudson in the middle of the game. But that's how we were running around the field as soon as we jumped off sides. So we didn't even wait. But guess what? Nobody jumped off sides in the game because you knew, I can't say the words that were said, but you knew what were going to happen to you if you did flinch. You had Tom and you had Bill that were going to let you hear it. You might not get back on the field. Yeah. You might be done for.
Yeah. Big question Monday night is the status of Jalen Johnson. We saw him on the practice field yesterday. Don't know how much he worked out, but his conditioning will be an issue. And also you don't know how badly his groin is injured. You have experience. Your last experience as an NFL player was your career ended because of a groin injury. How can you help us understand what he might be going through and what he wants to avoid?
Obviously, I don't know the extent of his injury, right? But I know how tricky a groin is. My last workout, I was on a workout with the Buffalo Bills. You're healthy and in shape. We're going to find you. I ended up straining, partially tearing my groin on the field there. And then, you know, you go through rehab. It's the middle of the season. Now you got teams calling. They want to sign you. Okay, hey, my agent, you ready? Like, these teams want to bring you in for a workout. They want to sign you. This tight end got hurt. They need to bring someone in. I go, okay. I feel like I'm ready. I've been running, you know, it's supposed to be a couple more weeks before I start doing any football movements. I go out to the field, have a good day. Next day I go out, re-injure it. I'm out for the entire season. That's 2 years because I was on IR with the Saints pretty much the whole year before. Then I missed this whole season because of a groin. So when I hear groin, it's a little bit PTSD for him because I know how tough that injury is. When you're a cornerback, there's some positions I'm like, okay, if you feel like you're ready, you're ready. You're a cornerback, you're doing these movements that are choreographed. And when you're a cornerback, you go in the game, the first time that you don't know where you're going, he does an in-break when you thought he was going out, and you have to put this torque on your groin, you have to move in a certain way, you could injure it right there. And this is something that could stay with you for a season. I don't know the extent. He could be further along than I was, obviously, than anybody, whatever, where it's fine. But I'm always, when I hear groin, I'm always inclined to say, you think you're healthy, wait another week or two, and then you're actually healthy, because I know from experience that you're not there even when you think you are.
That could be the difficult thing, because also the conditioning aspect is when he is on the field, how many snaps does he play? But I think you also said this, and I think people agree, 75% of Jalen Johnson better than 100% of probably Nashon Wright.
Absolutely. If it just came down to him not getting re-injured, watching Nashon Wright in preseason, I'm like, okay, the Bears got a find here. I'm like, this guy's big, he's long, he can jam, he can reroute. Dennis Allen seems to like him. I think they've done a good job of coaching this guy up. And then I watched the last preseason game, and not just the catches he gave up. Every single route, this guy, for some reason during the game, and some guys are great in practice, they're practice players, they can't play in the game. For some reason, this guy couldn't stick within 5 yards. David, I think you could get open on this guy. I'm not convinced that you couldn't. That's what I was seeing out there. Man, I go, Nashon Wright, what happened to you in from training camp to the preseason game?
I think that was a compliment.
Yeah, it was a compliment to you, obviously. You're getting open on an NFL cornerback. I'm sorry, Nashon. And David was a...
Did you see him lose confidence as that game went on? It seemed like he got called on a penalty. And then he kind of,
it was an early penalty, and it was two penalties on the same play.
And it felt
that's
like,
pretty bad.
It felt like you almost lost him at that point. Like, yeah. It was like, ooh, you know.
Pass interference and a face mask. Yes. And cornerback is one of those positions where you can lose that confidence. Another thing is, Dennis Allen's not doing you any favor cornerbacks. He's putting a lot of faith in you. And when you don't have an edge rusher that, you know, I told David this stat. Now, I'll ask Mully, see if he knows the answer to this. I know David didn't. Of the four active defensive ends, edge rushers on the Bears rosters, how many total sacks did they have last season, the four guys combined?
I believe 5.5 for Montez Sweat.
Yep,
I believe.
Good.
Was it two or three for Dio? I'm going to go 9.
Well, you're close. 8.5.
Oh.
8.5
back
total sacks.
The guys who will be active on Monday night don't have the backups. They don't have a sack.
Dominic Robinson did not have a sack. Daniel Hardy did not have a sack in the last year. And obviously, Austin Booker, different story. I think he had 1.5. And I'm very high on Austin Booker whenever he gets back, if he's able to pick up where he left off. I think this kid is a real player. His moves, his aggressiveness, he's going to be good.
Speed.
I'm sorry. His speed. This guy, if it takes a little bit of time, I don't know, but I think he's going to be good. But what they have right now, Dennis Allen is going to have to scheme up some pressure. He is not getting it from his edge rushers, unless Montez Sweat comes out and maybe he can get a sack. Besides that, I don't see one edge rusher that's going to at least beat somebody to get a sack.
So neither guy had a sack at all. It was 5.5 and 3.
Us that three had the same amount of sacks as Dominic Robinson and Daniel Hardy last year.
Yeah, that's not quality depth. That's guys who made the roster, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's hard to count on guys like that. Are you surprised that they didn't go out and sign a veteran this training camp to take a look at?
David, you know I've been climbing on the table.
You're Mr. Za'Darius Smith.
Hey, they just cleared out some money. They redid Jalen's contract. They got $8 million. Would that be enough?
I think that would be enough. I've been pounding, climbing on the table. And I'll be honest, Za'Darius Smith, I turned on his film and watched his film, and he's okay. I think he's a little bit better of a version of Dio Dangbo, and I think Dio Dangbo can get there. But Za'Darius Smith is 32. He's done it. He had he had more sacks than everybody on the Bears starting roster last year. Yeah. Molly, okay? Wow. He had 9 last year. This whole defensive end package had 8.5. He's a big guy. He can move up and down the line, 3 technique. He can play 6. He can play 9. He can do everything. He's 6'4", 275. So he fits that Dennis Allen stereotype of the big, strong guys.
Dio, obviously, they thought he was close. They kept saying stuff like that. The one thing he does is fit sort of the big body defensive end that is the preferred guy from the coordinator. But you still wonder 48
million.
It'd
be nice to see him play the part as well as he looks the part.
Yes.
Oh, he's first off the bus. I'm not going to say that. I see this guy on the bus. Yeah. I go, man, they got some people. I got to block him. But then when I turn on the film, first thing I'm watching when I turn on film is I watch the player, right? I go, let me see this guy's pass moves, what he's doing. I look at Dio. Okay, I'm probably not chipping much. They're probably going to give me a couple of pass pros on some play action where I can at least sell the run.
Clay, we'll let you go. Just curious, will the force be with the Bears on Monday night?
I think it will be. I think they will have the force. They will have the they will have the cadence, which is the force. You can't attack the Jedi without the full force, David. I think they'll have it. I think the Bears will pull off. Unfortunately, it's an upset. I don't think it's an upset. We'll pull off the home upset against the Vikings.
Great stuff. We'll see you later on the Big Pro Football Show.
Absolutely.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris. Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
They blitz more than any other team on any down. They load up the box. They typically want, many rushers, rushing a QB, as many one-on-ones at the least that they can have. And I think they play well together. They go.
That's Caleb Williams talking about the Vikings defense that he gets to face on Monday night. This is Rahimi and Harris with Mark Brody on The Score. Mark Brody is at Hallis Hall. And I think that the Vikings defense is a test for anyone. The fact that we didn't talk about Caleb Williams last year crumbling underneath it, the outside factors are typically what we discuss when we talk about the results of the 2 losses last year compared to what could happen this year. That also, Marshall, is an indication that you're a little more encouraged in year number 2, even if it's a new offense with Ben Johnson, just by that alone. Like hearing Caleb Williams talking about it, gives you a little more confidence. He knows that he knows what's coming, or at least he knows that they're going to try to make it sure that he doesn't know what's coming. But that's the element of surprise. You have to know that they're going to try to throw you off balance in any way, shape, or form.
People can tell you about what it's going to be like, but for him to have experienced it firsthand, not once, but twice, and been in one game, taking his team to overtime and won, and then being in a much less desirable situation on the road. I think that has him in a mindset where, okay, I know what the worst of it should look like because I got sacked 68 times last year, and the Minnesota Vikings has people who seem like they're omnipresent.
Yeah, if you just look at like blind box score stats, obviously last year to last year, Bears offensive numbers versus Minnesota defensive numbers, horrifying.
Not like, great.
Horrifying. 68 sacks, for example. Minnesota tied for the NFL lead with 33 takeaways in 2024. They were 5th allowed in points per game. You just go along with that and you're like, okay, got it. That's why they were one of the best teams in the regular season last year. You know Brian Flores is going to cook up something terrifying. But knowing that and then being able to know you've got that extra, if I have to go off platform, if you have enough time to do so. You know, at least you've got like a plan B if you have to have it. I think that also affects your plan A. And that's the part of this that I think is pretty key. The concept of confusion, like we talk about, being the real currency in the NFL now. Your whole job is to confuse your opponent as well as physically dominate them. This all plays a factor in what the Bears are expecting on Monday night.
So that plan A that you're talking about, the best part of it is now plan A is being run by Ben Johnson. So he looks back over his shoulder and he realizes, hey, I was told if I just do what this guy tells me to do and execute what he wants me to do, we'll be fine. I'm going to go ahead and follow that based on his resume and based on the fact that, like, I'm kind of scared of him because I don't really know what to expect from him. So I love the Caleb Williams, Ben Johnson dynamic as far as the Jedi Master and the Padawan, the new Padawan that's come through. And let's be honest, Caleb Williams is still very much in Padawan stage right now. He may be very, very talented, but you want to make sure that he becomes the best of the Jedi as opposed to, like, I don't know, Darth Vader.
Well, and the thing is we know Ben Johnson has said his success with the Lions against the Vikings, he's not going to copy and paste that game plan. So what does he have to say about facing them with this Bears team? Well, Mark Grody asked him that very question.
How difficult is it to get creative or add extra help as far as blocking is concerned when you have two guys on the Vikings in Bernard and Van Ginkle who are, you know, capable of double-digit sack seasons?
Shoot, yeah. I mean, I think there's more than that, too. They have Dallas Turner was a first-rounder a year ago that he's going to be coming to his own here year two. And then I think they really upgraded their interior defensive line as well. I think that gets overlooked a little bit between Jonathan Allen and Hargrave. So, you know, I think the beauty of the defense, once again, I said it yesterday, is they create a lot of one-on-one matchups. And when you have guys that they feel good about winning their one-on-ones, that it puts a lot of stress on our guys. But you know, I think we know the task at hand. We'll see how practice goes here this week. And, you know, it's hard to have any breather plays this week. It's just the nature of how Flo calls it. And, you know, we got to be locked in if we want to have success against this defense.
There's a lot there.
I love all of it, but specifically when he talks about two things I love. Sometimes coaches kind of get vague when they talk about other players, or even if they get specific, not as, I don't want to say it's disrespect, but they're like the number, they call it the number. He's calling guys' names by name when he's responding to Mark Grody's question, because he's like, oh yeah, you talked about those guys, but what about these other guys in the middle? What about these other guys? And the fact that he talks about one-on-one matchups, and that's when my light bulb goes off, because he's like, yeah, we're gonna need a left tackle this week. We're going to need a left tackle, because if Brian Flores thinks he can exploit the left tackle position and that left tackle's on an island for any extended period of time, there's going to be trouble. So I'm really curious as to how he accepts that, because he's already talked about it, and then talks to his team about whether they're going to have somebody out there with him helping Braxton Jones, or scheming things in a way that Braxton Jones is not exposed in a bad way.
Well, and I think it's also step number one for Brian Flores is still attempt to confuse your quarterback. That's going to be what it is, right? It's attempt to confuse your quarterback, knowing what I know about what your new OC does. And it's that second step where I feel like he's probably game planning. If you're Kevin O'Connell on the other side, you're saying, who's available in the secondary? Let's go get him. You know, that's probably your game plan number one, knowing what you know about the Bears position groups and who's injured. So you're attacking the weaknesses either way. I think one of the reasons Braxton Jones is the guy this week is because he's also the most mentally capable. And I'm not saying people don't have the mental aptitude. I'm saying he has the most experience. He has the most understanding of what he's seen. You know, that experience is what also gets you there. It's not just necessarily, oh, is this the end game for everybody? No, he's the veteran. He's established. He knows a little bit of what to expect more than, say, a rookie in Ozzie Trapillo, for example, or a guy who didn't see playing time outside of mostly on the practice squad, Theo Benedict. You know, I feel like those are the differences there. Yes, Karan Amagaji faced the Vikings. We know how that
went. Did he, though?
And it was on the road, which factors in tremendously. Just here.
One of the top five dumbest things that the Bears did last year by player or coach was putting him out there in that situation for his first ever NFL appearance.
But I say all of that to say there's multiple factors that help bake in the reason that it's not going to be complete shock and awe, or at least it doesn't get anticipated that way.
No, Braxton Jones has seen it, much like we were talking about Caleb Williams has seen Brian Flores' defense twice. Braxton Jones has seen a lot in the NFL over his 40-plus starts at the tackle position. So even if he's not 100% physically, the mental aptitude that you're talking about, the capabilities and his ability to look back and remember what happened, watch film in a different way because he lived it, is definitely something that Ben Johnson, I guess, is banking on at this point.
Well, and also when he says there's a lot of flow dictating, game flow. So what is the defense giving you? Which means you're going to see in-game adjustments. You want to see them before halftime. Yeah, that's part of this too, is I feel like so many times last year we talked about the Bears' halftime adjustments. You want to see those happen in-game a little bit more clearly. So that's where I think he's also discussing that. You know, hopefully we see that from one drive to the next. You know, hopefully we see maybe something get picked up on a little bit more. That would be a benchmark for me. And when I hear him talk, I feel like that's going to be something you're seeing. And because it's before halftime, usually you just would look at it as, oh, these are different plays or this is a different drive or something like that. The element of confusion, again, comes back into play.
The confusion is going to be great because we know that Ben Johnson knows that Brian Flores knows that Ben Johnson knows that they each have things up their sleeve. And I can't wait to see it play out in this. I'm anticipating what you might be doing, but you might be doing something different. So I'm also planning for that just in case. And it goes, it's a two-way street. With those two, it's a two-way street. And Ben Johnson's gotten the better of Brian Flores the last 2 years. He really has.
Well, and the Bears did come back from, what, 11 down in that 30-27 loss in overtime. They're capable of coming back.
You know why? Caleb Williams. That's when the magic comes out. That's
what the flow, the game flow he's talking about. Caleb Williams talks about flow state. That's different. I think that's him feeling that the game has slowed down around him. That's a timing thing. That's an offensive rhythm thing, almost like where the game feels like a meditation to you. But this game flow is a different piece. That is what you're talking about, the adjustments, and then feeling that way as a result.
Yeah, for Caleb Williams, I think, you know, we did predictions yesterday. I said 7-10. I think a lot of that is because early in the season, I don't know if he's going to be within striking distance at the end of the game to make the Caleb magic matter. But I think late in the season, that Caleb magic and these one score, you know how NFL games typically are, that Caleb magic is going to be the difference in winning games later in the season, I believe.
Well, and that one, for example, was a one score game. You just don't want to lose all of them. Not yeah. That I'm still bitter.
If you just win half of your one-score games during the 10-game losing streak, it looks a lot different, the season as a whole. You get what I'm saying?
That's a double-layer math.
Now, don't get me wrong. There's an Arizona game in there. There's a Patriots game in there. There's some games where you're just like, okay, that game, they didn't have a chance.
Hey, by the way, while we're here thinking about the disappointing losses or the ones that frustrated you the most, did anybody listen to the Take the North podcast and find out yet the prediction between Mark and Dan Weider for who the most disappointing player was going to be?
I did not. Who was it?
The MDP. Maybe, I hadn't heard it yet. That's why I was asking.
I may have to text Grody and ask him that question now that it's out. Now that the embargo is off.
How would you answer that?
The potential MDP?
Yeah, for you.
I think for me,
I just spent a half a segment trying to coach up Tyreek Stevenson on a Friday morning.
I don't think it's him because I told you Pro Bowl.
I'm team Tyreek as well.
Pro Bowl or bust for Tyreek Stevenson. He's going to get the opportunities. He's going to make it happen because he has no choice.
I'm worried that he might elicit the reaction of I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
So the disappointment is I'm just going to say it like this: second round, there were three players the Bears took in the second round. I'm going to need something out of the second round. It's the second round. And you go.
So we've moved the goalpost now from the Ryan Poles era third rounders because there's not enough of them left.
Let's hope it doesn't seep into the first round.
To the Ryan Poles era second rounder.
Well, no, you expect a reasonable expectation of a second round pick in the NFL is that player contributes in a significant way year one. It doesn't have to be at the beginning of the season, but by the end of the season. And now, just look, give me one of those guys to hitch my wagon to, whether it's Luther Burden III, whether it's Shamar, whether it's Ozzie, Trapillo, yeah. Like those are three different players, three different positions, and I don't know if Luther Burden III is going to get enough run.
Yeah, I was going to say, out of those three, who plays the most? See, that's what I'm saying. Like, Ozzie, I don't know what his role is going to be, how much he's going to play. Luther, I mean, he's the fourth wide receiver right now. say. I don't know which one is
probably
getting run.
I think it's probably Luther, right? Given what they expect to see out of him in the slot, or does that become like the 1 and 2 with him and Zacchaeus?
Well, doesn't Shamar Turner have to play? Doesn't he have to rotate in and play football?
I think that's the answer.
I think he has to be a guy that's in every game trying to do something. He's a second round pick. Your second round defensive lineman has to do something.
Yeah, so should your second round offensive lineman.
Yes,
but when you've got established veterans in front of them.
And that's why Luther Burden III is probably going to get a bit of a pass, because it's like, what's he supposed to do with really good guys? As long as the offense is making things happen, they should be in good shape. So it's exciting.
But that's a big as long as.
Oh, well, yeah, I got faith in Ben Johnson.
Part of the reason we're talking about this in the way we are is because they simply did not run enough plays as an offense last year.
70 is the goal this year, I believe. 70 per game. For Ben Johnson,
that would be fantastic.
That means good things are happening, and you're controlling the clock. Do you want to give stuff away?
Yeah, you deserve to at least, I think, have some things for hanging out with us.
Yeah, so just keep listening for the chance to win a pair of tickets to the first ever Oktoberfest with the Cubs, which is coming to Wrigleyville September 19th through the 21st. A little preview for you. In the Toyota Camry lot on Gray Street. Enjoy authentic food, beer tents, live music, carnival rides, even a ceremonial keg tap. Tickets on sale now, starting at just $15. Children 10 and under, they get in free. Head to Cubs.com. That's Cubs.com/Oktoberfest for the details.
About those Cubs, before you're in your pumpkin spice and apple cider season and whatnot.
I think it's here already, but yeah.
It is. What's been lost in a lot of the discussion surrounding Kyle Tucker's availability has been not only how this affects his future moving forward, because he's a free agent at the end of the season, but also where the likely targets are. Well, Jeff Passan had some pretty big news on ESPN that he's continued to track over the last couple of weeks. We want to give you the latest on that. It's worth a listen. That's next here on Raheemy and Harris with Mark Grody. He's at Halas on The Score.
Mark Grody has got your Bears hit. There's happenings at Halas Hall, and we are lucky to have Mark Grody join us here on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Bears.
Bears. Gentlemen, another jam-packed day out here at Halas Hall with a full practice today, which the media was allowed to get a glimpse of. Another open locker room session. I will take you into the Bears locker room a little bit later on in this Bears hit. Plus, Caleb Williams was headlining the interview room today, the lectern, if you will. Ben Johnson speaking in back-to-back days, which was cool. We will hear from him as well. The Bears had, in the glimpse that we were allowed to see in the practice today, they had three running backs in practice today on fields 1 and 2. DeAndre Swift, Kyle Manungai returned, and Britton Brown was out there as well. No Roschon Johnson. He is still injured. As far as injuries are concerned, well, I'm not sure if it's an injury or not, but TJ Edwards, the Bears' best linebacker, was not spotted on the practice field today. That first injury report comes out tomorrow, so we won't have to wait much longer to get a little bit more texture on the Bears that may or may not be injured in some cases. As I said, of course, the headliner out here today is QB1, Bears quarterback Caleb Williams. And I thought this was really interesting today. I know we've all made, and justifiably, a big deal out of the Caleb Williams cadence and the pre-snap issues that have existed going back to last year. Cole Kmet said that Caleb has had no choice but to get better at the cadence. Kmet also said that the Kansas City game, I thought this was really interesting, that was one of his better games getting off of the football, and he said a lot of it is because of Caleb's improving cadence. So here is Caleb Williams himself with even more testimonials the way he calls it. Here's Caleb.
You know, you may have heard sound bites or whatever. Last year, cadence was a little different than obviously this year. So, you know, I think this year it's been awesome. It's been fun to use. Being able to, you know, hearing the other guys on the other side that hear me every single day for the past how many ever months we've been practicing versus our defense, come up to me like, you know, the cadence is getting strong. It's getting better. It's, you know, it's getting harder to decipher what and when the ball is going to be snapped and things like that. So it's, you know, positive feedback from the guys that hear me every single day. And being able to use it as a weapon is really important for us and our team. And, you know, getting those
kind of things we call dirty yards, in a way, is, you know, something as small as a cadence, which is huge and important for us as an offense. But from the defense side, it's something as small as a cadence is, you know, getting us some positive yards to be able to help us, you know, either stay on the field or, you know, put us in advantageous positions.
So, look, that's nice. That's extra stuff. That's advanced level stuff, and you want your quarterback to be good at it. I would like him to not, you know, fumble the opening snap on an end around. You know what I mean? So, like, my bar's lower, I guess, right now. But should we expect Lawrence, him to be able to use cadence as a weapon?
Yes, I think that's a goal. And I think he did that. He did that earlier in the preseason.
In the good game.
Yeah, he was able to do that.
The Buffalo game.
It should definitely be a part of his arsenal. You're right, though, and they talked a lot about that at the fumble, that everything leading up to that was sped up. So that play got sped up.
Yeah.
And because of it, and that's why Ben has been so particular about all the stuff that happens inside of the huddle, getting the play to him quickly enough, getting the play to the rest of the squad out quickly enough, and then getting to the line and being prepared and not being rushed because of the play clock.
I also love the fact that the defensive players are complimenting him, because that may just sound like them saying it, but that's not true, because last year the defensive players were kind of saying the opposite. Remember Big Bill, Andrew Billings, just kind of torturing Caleb Williams during training camp with letting out the big screams and the yells. So to hear actual testimony from Cole Kmet, who, you know, never went out of his way to, you know, to say that everything was perfect with Caleb Williams. So to hear finally, guys, specific testimonials about it, as opposed to what we usually heard was, it's getting better. Oh, yeah, it's getting better. It's getting better. And then you talk to guys in the locker room, it wasn't necessarily getting better. Now these guys are offering it to them that it's getting better for Caleb Williams.
I don't know, Grody, and maybe you got a sense for it today, and maybe we'll hear some in the next cut. I don't know. But, like, how much control is Caleb going to be given at the line of scrimmage and during the course of the game? Like, is he a quarterback in full early on here in the Ben Johnson regime, or is he just going to run what Ben tells him to do? I don't know the answer to that yet.
And you know what, Spiegs, nor does Ben Johnson. You know, and Ben Johnson is leaving it open. He, you know, and we'll get to Ben Johnson here in just a little bit, too. But Ben Johnson basically said it's up to Caleb. But a lot of it's going to have to do with his preparation starting today, in the next few days, and what he's capable of. And the beautiful part about Ben Johnson is, you know, it's always a fluid situation. Ben Johnson is ready to adjust on a dime. And guess what? Caleb Williams was today talking about making in-game adjustments, you know, in general, but specifically against this very, as we know, very aggressive Brian Flores Minnesota defense.
The first part of it is, which we've talked about a little bit, is being able to understand that there's going to be a wrinkle with Flores, and understanding that, you know, when that happens, it's a wrinkle every single week for every single team, and you know, trying to put his team and his defense in, you know, an advantageous position. And so being able to adjust to those and be level-minded throughout the whole game is really important. And then, you know, from there, once you adjust, it's being able to, you know, go out there and execute, and even when things aren't in our favor, and you know, maybe the first, you know, quarter, second quarter, whatever the case may be, and in that sense of, you know, we haven't adjusted fully yet, is being able to still execute our base plays and get positive yards, positive gain, keep us on the field, and not have negative plays.
Okay, so the in-game adjustment stuff, trying to work through all of that for Caleb, I think is, it's going to be a challenge, especially considering who they're playing this week. You know, like that to me is something that is fun to watch, is that how do you handle what they throw at you and then make sure you counterpunch so that you can have an advantage on the offensive side.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's why you get on coach versus coach and start to think about that and think about Ben dictating problems to Flores, and that's what he's done with better personnel, of course, you know, in a lot of ways, but he dictated tempo and confusion to Flores with the Lions, and that's been very effective growth.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. He did have success. And quite frankly, Caleb Williams had more success against Minnesota than I thought he would last year. I remember the buildup going into that first game, which was an overtime loss for the Bears. Like, we were all like super fearful of what was coming at Caleb. But Caleb did a pretty good job. Had a couple of his, you know, a bunch of his best throws that he had in a Bears uniform, I thought, in that first quarter where he had the back-to-back plays, one to DeAndre Swift, the other to Keenan Allen, and then that 27-yard dart in the fourth quarter. So Caleb actually did a pretty good job last year. And I thought it was interesting too, like Caleb was talking about specifically the Viking safety, the omnipresent Harrison Smith, who, by the way, is only 36 years old. Feels like he should be 45. But he talked about the cat and mouse game that he had with 22, as he called them, how Caleb would make an adjustment. Then Harrison Smith makes an adjustment for the Minnesota defense, and then he readjusts. So Caleb was kind of smiling and appreciating that was going on. I'm looking forward to seeing what Caleb has in terms of those adjustments, getting the line set up right. All of that stuff is just huge for Caleb Williams this year. So I thought that was very interesting. As far as Ben Johnson is concerned, the Bears head coach, speaking of the Minnesota defense, we're going to stay with that theme as we get closer to game day on Monday night at Soldier Field. But I brought up to Ben Johnson during his press conference today the complications in going up against two big-time edge rushers in Jonathan Greenard and Andrew Van Ginkel, both capable of getting double-digit sacks for a season, which they did last year. So here is Ben Johnson on dealing with that. And I was specifically asked them about, how do you block all these guys?
Shoot, yeah. I mean, I think that there's more than that, too. They have Dallas Turner was a first-rounder a year ago that he's going to be coming to his own here year two. And then I think they really upgraded their interior defensive line as well. I think that gets overlooked a little bit between Jonathan Allen and Hargrave. So, you know, I think the beauty of the defense, once again, I said it yesterday, is they create a lot of one-on-one matchups. And when you have guys that they feel good about winning their one-on-ones, that it puts a lot of stress on our guys. But, you know, I think we know the task at hand. We'll see how practice goes here this week. And, you know, it's hard to have any breather plays this week. It's just the nature of how Flo calls it. And, you know, we got to be locked in if we want to have success against this defense.
So that defense to me is so fun to watch because of what you're bringing up there, Groats. They got a couple of Swiss Army knives. Van Ginkel's one of them. Metellus is another.
Yeah, Metellus.
They line him up everywhere from defensive line to strong safety.
Mm-hmm.
He plays everywhere. And having that type of versatility and having a guy like Byron Murphy, who's really good out there at corner, it allows you to do so many different things. And I hope that Ben Johnson's had a great record against the Vikings, but these aren't the Lions. And hopefully the Bears are in a place where they can handle all of the cat and mouse stuff that Caleb was talking about.
Run the ball.
That surely would help. You know, but even getting up to the line of scrimmage and thinking that you're seeing something that you're not seeing.
Snap the ball on time.
Damn right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good luck, everybody.
Spiegs, you were talking about, you know, Ben Johnson and his adjustments and his process. And I think this cut I want to play for you guys from Ben Johnson will take you into that just a little bit, like literally what he is thinking this week and going into the game against Minnesota, which should give us a little bit of intel on how Ben Johnson handles this week to week. And of course, it was in the form of an offensive coordinator previously. But Ben starts talking about what is true. No matter how much we know about Caleb Williams, there's still a lot of mystery surrounding Caleb Williams. Here's Ben Johnson.
There is, of course, a giant unknown, but you know, I equate it back to when I was in high school, man, we'd go into game days and only throw it about five times. Now, we're a darn good team. We ended up winning state my junior year, but I always come out of the game, I was, shoot, why didn't we throw it more than that, you know, as a quarterback? And it goes back to, well, what did the week look like in practice? And so I think that's why the preparation, what it looks like on the field, is so important. I think we'll have a real good feel as a coaching staff what we're going to get out of Caleb on Monday night with how he approaches the next few days. And it's going to help dictate how I call the game as well. You know, how much we put the ball on really in his hands and on his shoulders to carry us through. Or, you know, it's everybody on this offense is going to have to carry the load at some point here this game. You talked about all the one-on-ones up front with our O-line, but I think our backs got to hold up in protection. Our tight ends got to be involved. Our receivers have to be physical. I mean, it's everybody here. So we'll see over the course of the week what that looks like. But, you know, I think since I became a coach, that's really – I go in early in the week, and, man, I have a lot of concerns about what it's going to look like on game day. And, man, I don't know if this is going to work, blah, blah, blah. But by the time we get to the end of the week, I usually have a high degree of confidence in our guys because of how they've gone about their business. And I already feel that right now with this crew.
Man, I love how he is comfortable talking about what he doesn't know yet. You know, we've seen it a bunch during camp. Like, it's a process, and he's going through the process, and you don't got to pretend that you know stuff just to, like, keep your gravitas or keep your you know, your air of leadership. It's like there's power in admitting you don't know. He doesn't know yet how much he's going to be able to let Caleb do the thing. Last year, they were going to just let Caleb try to walk up and be Matthew Stafford, remember? Like, literally against Matthew Stafford and the Rams, we saw Caleb up there.
He actually was fairly successful in that particular game.
In that game, he was, but I remember being struck by, like, look how much they're letting him count guys and dictate and change plays and everything like that.
And he wasn't right all the time.
No, but here's Ben openly saying, I don't know how much I'm going to let him do that. I don't know yet.
Yeah, let's see how the practices go. Let's see how the game's going, and then we can adjust.
Ben might be good enough that he doesn't need to let him do too much of that early on.
I think that's
the idea.
I think that's the goal.
I think it's the goal is like to not have to ask the kid who's learning to save your freaking franchise.
You don't have to be Superman on every play. Like, live to fight another down. Throw the ball away. Be on time. And if you're on time with this offense and you go where you're supposed to go, the offense itself, with Caleb's ability, with his arm talent, they should be able to make some hay against defenses in the NFL.
And this is the whole thing. This is the whole thing that the season's about is, like, you know, Ben limiting Caleb and Caleb accepting it. For the greater good, and knowing that there's going to be plenty of time and plenty of opportunities for him to show the special.
Groats, guess what, man? We've already run out of time in this segment, but there's more stuff. So we're extending your segment.
How about that?
That's what we're doing.
Hey, if you guys are down, I'm down. I'll be here all day.
All right, good, because we got more stuff that we need to talk to you about, more Bears that we need to hear from, like DJ Moore, for example.
Two words.
We will do that coming up next here on The Score.
Ah, Grody.
Extendo Bears Hit with Mark Grody, because there's a lot as we head into the first game of the season, Monday night against the Minnesota Vikings on Monday Night Football.
It seems like a really good time to remind you that tomorrow is our football season kickoff show in the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Studio. Dave wants that Olin Krutz will be with us in studio. That alone is enough. But then you add in that Troy Aikman is going to be on the show. And Steve Sciarippa, right? Is Steve Sciarippa on the show tomorrow, too?
Absolutely.
And we'll have a special NFL season debut version of Categories live. Maybe we should get a player or two from the crowd.
They can take my spot.
All right.
It's all brought to you
Mine
by...
Mine, too.
All right.
And Alex's.
All right.
They can host.
All right.
It's all brought to you by PNC Bank, your local Ford dealers, and Blue Cross Blue Shield in Illinois.
We just decided as a show, I am hosting a version of Categories with three listeners from the crowd.
We did.
Tomorrow.
We decided that.
That's awesome.
That,
I love it.
I think that'll be fun as hell, Mark.
Yep. We decided
I'm the only one who thinks that.
Poor Spiegel. Poor Spiegel. Hey, man, you've done a great job of keeping Categories alive, though, man, even if you don't have the support of your teammates, dude.
Actually, they like it. Lawrence likes it, actually.
I do. I was fighting for it earlier today.
It was.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Some of this is
anybody.
Theater. Some of it.
Some of it is theater. Yes. It's Crack Slippers you're thinking of. Crack Slippers is the one
Crack Slippers. Yeah. Oh, my God. That's when you were the and, right?
In yes.
The Mac show?
I was the show in the Danny Mac show. That's
oh,
right.
Yeah. That was you?
I was the show. Everybody knew it. If you're listening.
You were the show?
Close enough. Or was I the in the Danny Mac show? You couldn't
I think
tell.
You always called yourself the, yeah. Unfortunately. Mm-hmm. The. A good name. Is there a band called the
I was
the?
Just thinking that.
It's a damn good band. And they're back. That's Matt Johnson. Johnson, the singer and songwriter.
There is a the.
Oh, yeah. Infected is a great album. Mind Bomb is a great album after he had a brain aneurysm. That's a badass band.
All right.
The. Yes. Let's think of like repetitive names. How would you call that? Successive similar words? Yes. The.
Grody.
About the Bears, baby. Bears. May I take you guys into the Bears locker room? Can
please,
I do that?
Please.
This is
Can
what we hope that you do with every Bears hit.
Absolutely. I love it. That's my favorite part of the day is getting into the Bears locker room. Some days are better than others. This was a really good day, I thought. And it's always fun to talk to the Bears wide receiver, DJ Moore. And one of the things that Ben Johnson has been saying, sort of, you know, in a joking way, but sort of serious too, is that, you know, he loses sleep trying to figure out how he's going to get the ball to all of these potential weapons. So DJ Moore was asked about equal distribution for all the receivers. And there's a DJ Moore comp that you will hear about this as well.
Just how have you seen Caleb distribute the ball where he's not just locking in on one guy, but it seems like he's trying to evenly get you guys all involved?
I don't know if it's going to be even. He got to go through his progression. Whoever opens the fastest, I mean, we all are racing to get it to a certain spot in our progression. And if one's not open, two not open, and he got to get all the way back to four or five, I mean, it is what it is at the end of the day. Whoever gets the ball just got to make something happen.
This will be the most ways that you've been used in an offense under Ben this year?
Maybe. I don't know. We can't tell everybody everything into the media. Ooh. Everybody see this, so I don't know.
Have you heard the Debo comparisons?
I have heard the Debo comparisons. You know, you can't get away from it, not with social media. So, I mean, it is what it is.
Is that a fair comparison?
Nah, I'm myself. I love Debo, but I'm myself.
But just in the way that, like, you know, he's in the backfield, he's out wide in the slot. Like, is that what you like, to being able to be everywhere?
I mean, just to get the ball in my hands, I want to say yeah, but being compared to Debo, you know, he was doing it at a high level and still is. So I just got to get my feet wet and going.
Man, DJ Moore, that twinkle in his voice, I can only imagine there was a twinkle in his eye at the beginning of the exchange. He's like, I can't tell you everything.
Well, he was twinkling. He was twinkling in there. And you're right. I love that part because that is the way towards the end of last season, they started to figure it out with DJ. Just throw the ball to him, let him run 2 yards, throw the ball to him and see what he could do. Hand the ball off to him, which they did do some last year. I got to imagine, you know, that DJ Moore could be the most important receiver, at least early on with this Bears team.
I wish, though, that it almost felt like he took the Debo comp as a slight. So I'm glad that they kept following up with it. And it's like, no, that's a good thing to be.
Yeah, for sure.
Versatility is awesome.
But, you know, look, man, I'm so excited and intrigued by what Ben Johnson's going to
do. I'm so scared.
That's our show. Good night, everybody.
Don't be afraid, Lawrence. Don't be afraid. That's okay. You've been hurt before. I know.
Someone got that. It went above everyone else's head, but someone got that.
I thought you were doing the good vibes and the worry.
I was a whole thing, and eventually texters and people in the Twitch would be like, I know exactly what Lawrence just did.
Got you.
The show works on many levels.
I got to say this, though. The first part of that answer when he's like, I'm not about equal distribution. He'll just be going through his reads, and it is what it is. I love that about DJ. Like, he has not been historically the diva wide receiver who demands the ball and wants the ball and gets pissed off. I don't believe, like, he certainly hasn't had that reputation. There seemed to be an understanding there of got to go through the progressions and we'll see what happens. I mean, maybe he gets grumpy, you know, behind the scenes that we don't know about.
But certainly getting the ball in the backfield could help with that as well if he feels like he's getting utilized in that way.
Get that man some touches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think grumpy's a good word to use. I mean, there was a grumpy moment last year where he went out of bounds and he said, finally admitted, you know, he shouldn't have done that, said that that's not going to happen again. I just love that T.J. Moore said, first guy to get open. First guy to get open, you're getting the football. And who knows, maybe it will be something like that. And you know,
I'm sure it pleases him.
Oh, it pleases once. What? Pleases me? What? It's so good, man. It is just the best. Pleases me. It doesn't weeder using weird words like that. Mm-hmm. DJ Moore also, like, this is
let's
this
go, Grody. Very... We can't give you a third segment. Let's go, buddy.
We can.
We could, actually.
This is what I'm going for. More on Caleb Williams with DJ Moore.
What are you expecting out of Caleb Williams in terms of improvement relative to last year and into this?
His leadership to go up another notch and then his play to go up another notch. You know, he's got the offense down pack and he just got to go out there with the keys that he has to his offense and just produce.
Where do you think his skills will go up this year in terms of, you know, throwing the football, everything?
I mean, we got a lot of playmakers out there now. So, I mean, you just choose who you want to go to, and then we can make him look good after that. So, I mean, we try to take a lot off his plate, but at the same time, he is the quarterback, so he just got to go out there and do his thing.
Do you feel like you two can hit the ground running this year as opposed to last year, where it took a little while to get the chemistry on the field up?
I don't know. We're going to have to see. Like I said last year, you don't know until you really start hitting the ground running and seeing where everybody's at.
We got to do it the Caleb way, and that's that.
Right. Well, they're doing it Ben's way.
They both are doing it Ben's way. It goes back to the Roma Dunze stuff we were playing earlier. Everybody's just got to do it Ben's way. That's kind of freeing, really.
Yeah. Hey, guys, it is Ben's way, and we might talk about this tomorrow. I'm going to be with Raheemy and Harris, and that is – and Weider had a talk with the guys – was it – I think it was with
– Mully and Hall
this
morning.
Ben Johnson. No, it was with Ben Johnson, and he shared with me on Friday when the two of us hosted together that what Ben Johnson is still saying is that Caleb's got to come to me. Like he's not necessarily going to go to Caleb. Now, he's going to work with Caleb, and he's not going to make Caleb uncomfortable. But he did say, look, if we want this to work, in other words, he's not going to dumb this thing down. You know what I mean? It's not going to be like the idea is to not take away half the field like with some of his predecessors. And I think back to Mitch Trubisky more than anybody with that. But that is a turn in terms of just admitting that the quarterback has to come to him, and DJ Moore knows that as well. Cole Kmet, gentlemen, spoke today.
Yeah, let's talk some 12 personnel.
Yeah, baby. I figured you'd like that, Lawrence. But Cole Kmet talked about him and Colston Loveland being on the field at the same time, two tight ends, and how that's going to work out.
I mean, obviously, Ben's done this before on very high-level offenses, and, you know, the goal is to get 70-plus plays in a game, so we're running a ton of plays, and when you do things like that and you're moving the ball, a lot of different guys will be able to get the ball in their hands. So excited about that, and I know if we all execute all together and, you know, on plays that you're not getting the ball, you're blocking, running downfield, it'll all work out for us for sure.
What excites you about getting to play alongside him and how you guys could potentially be used?
Yeah, I love it. Colson's great. It's been getting to know him. It's been a lot of fun. Consider him now a really close friend. And it's been cool to see him grow throughout camp, too. You know, adjusting to the physicality of the NFL is a different beast, but I've been really impressed by how he's handled himself, mainly in the run game and those type of deals and being physical in his routes. So that's been a lot of fun to watch, and I'm excited for him this year.
When you were a kid, or when you were a rookie, how long did it take you to kind of be in the right place at the right time?
I was a kid, wasn't I? yeah, it takes a bit. I mean, for me, it took a bit, but I had Jimmy Graham yelling at me all the time, and, you know, when you want to impress somebody, you find ways to make it right. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, as a player, you always want respect from the peers in your locker room, and those all three of those guys take a lot of pride in earning guys' respect, and when that's the case, they're going to do everything they can to know the playbook, know their job, and know that thing in and out.
Man,
that's how long Cole's been here. He was teammates with Jimmy Graham.
I love that, Lawrence. We love that stuff, you know, like the aging tight end helping the kid. We just had it. We were talking about it with Greg Olson
With Dez Clark.
With Dez Clark. It's exactly right. That Greg said Dez was like the dude who took care of him and how much Dez loved that. Good on Cole. Good on Cole. Say, like, and he and Colston are they consider each other good friends now.
Yeah.
Already. Yeah. Like they're working very closely together. And
look, Cole can eat in this offense along with Colston.
100%. 100%. And it's knowing that there's room for both of you. There's plenty. And guess what? Life is long. You know, one of you could be playing for somebody else in a couple years, too. You never know.
Jimmy Graham.
Might as well be a good person because it comes back around. And then one of them can hire the other. You might end up teammates with another down the line. That's how it works.
Lawrence, doesn't it feel like it was just yesterday that we would watch a Bears game when Cole Kmet was a rookie and everybody would be screaming why he wasn't on the field and why Jimmy Graham was playing on the field for the Bears? I remember that drill. Like, nobody wanted Jim. We got a rookie second rounder who played at Notre Dame and is from Chicago. How dare you put Jimmy Graham on the field for so long? And Matt Nagy would even admit, yeah, I got to find a way to get him going out there. But it does take time to learn the position. And I also thought it was interesting too. He only mentioned it once there in the cut that I played, Cole Kmet, that is, but he did mention a couple more times about the physical nature of the NFL. We know how physical Cole Kmet is, so it's interesting that he found it hard to adjust to that, because it seemed like to me that was Kmet, like right out of the chute, he was knocking guys down and wouldn't go down when he caught the football. But he's not as big of a body, Colston Loveland, so I do think the blocking portion is going to take a little time for Colston Loveland to catch up with.
Yeah, the inline stuff might take a little bit longer, but he does have the long levers, and that might help him in that regard. And we'll see. I think there'll be some movement blocking with him where you're going to see the whole package be put on display and allow him to use all of the gifts to go and get defenders. Speaking of defenders, I am fascinated, and we talked a little bit about this yesterday. While we talk about Brian Flores versus Ben Johnson, that's the sexy matchup. The idea of Dennis Allen versus J.J. McCarthy is also an interesting matchup. Has KOC done a good enough job getting J.J. ready for what it is? Because the same type of conversations we're having about Brian Flores, folks on KFAN are probably having about Dennis Allen. What is he going to do to try and confuse J.J. McCarthy and make his life uncomfortable?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, the answer to which we don't know. I mean, we can speculate on some of the things that he might do in disguising his defense and bringing pressure from unique places if he can't get it up front and the two guys on the end in Montez Sweat and Dio Odangbo. But Jaquan Brisker is an interesting part of this, too. You have full, healthy Jaquan Brisker getting ready to play in this game, and he could, like Kyler Gordon. We talked about Kyler Gordon being used differently and in different places. We could see some of that with Brisker. And make no mistake about it, Brisker believes that they will rattle the rookie quarterback, J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, just playing our type of defense. Don't do too much. Don't be Superman. Just playing our defense, and eventually he will force one, whether it's in the air or it's on the ground. I know it's going to come out at some point, and that's the type of defense we have, and I'm confident in what he has been called. So.
Okay.
Ball's coming loose. It's coming out. I love that.
Let's go.
You got to be careful what you say.
Brisker likes to set the precedent high. He always has, man.
Be careful. Don't want to add a little extra. But it's fine.
Yeah.
I like the confidence.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, and this is one of my my nuggets here.
Nuggets, tidbits.
Yeah. It just flows perfectly into it, actually. Yeah, gorgeously.
The style, the grace of Mark Grody.
Flowing robes.
Hey, man, I want the full hour, really. This is what I'm auditioning for with you guys right now. So Brisker, he was you guys remember about a week and a half ago and the reports of, and I was not out here for the record, but I read the reports too that Jaquan Brisker walked off the field alongside the trainer, Andre Tucker, presumably some sort of injury. And of course, we all get afraid when we hear that. But Brisker said, very subtly, it was just a personal issue. That's what he said. Yeah, it was just a personal issue as he walked off the field. I hope that that is the case. And I guess being that he was out there today practicing, that, mm-hmm. that was the case. So that was good to hear. I hope the personal issue is okay, not to downgrade that. I don't think I mentioned at the beginning, I probably should have, Jalen Johnson was out on the practice field today. Don't know if he was limited in any way. My guess is that that was the case, but saw him putting on the pads in the locker room, and he did go out there and practice. And lastly, tomorrow, this is the first time I got to be a part of this on the Take the North podcast. We did our predictions show, which we play back apparently at the end of the season so we can all look bad. Here were the categories really quickly. Record for the Bears, team MVP, breakout player, most disappointing player, signature win, and who is taking the North, who is winning the division, plus Super Bowl matchup and winner. The episode drops tomorrow on all those categories. This was difficult, but the three of us, Wiederer, Studzinski, and myself, went through it, and we all gave our answers on that. So I suggest that you check it out if you want to make fun of our predictions.
That is outstanding. So check out the next Take the North pod for all of that. Yeah, just to recap. So Jalen Johnson did practice. Kyle Manungai was out there as well, right?
Yes. Yep, Manungai was out there. Britton Brown was out there, too. The only running back of consequence that wasn't out there, Spiegs, was Roschon Johnson. No Roschon today.
Okay.
All right. So there's going to be categories on the Take the North podcast and categories on Spiegel and Holmes tomorrow.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. For the most part, that is the case. And like I said, it's a very complicated season for predictions because it's sort of like the Vikings. It's sort of like their opponent. You just don't know what you're going to get from the quarterback. He could be great. Caleb could come out and be like, the hell with all this conservative. We're going to have a slow start, just run the ball, and we got to reassess at the bye. He might be great. Who knows? But it's such a tough call when that position is so important.
Wouldn't that be great? Like,
oh,
if it all clicks.
Yeah.
If it all clicks on Monday night and things look like maybe there's a couple things that you want to improve on, but if it just looks good for people, what that'll do for everyone.
Yeah, I that's a template that we got to set, and we'll have some time to do that on the Monday of that game. Like, what are we watching for? Is it as simple as win-loss? I don't think it's quite as simple as that.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'll leave you guys with this, Lawrence, to your point right there, as Ben Johnson, I almost said Ben Brown again, Ben Johnson brought up, the unknown. There is the unknown, and the unknown could be that Caleb Williams blasts off and he becomes what we all thought he would be when he came out of USC.
That'd be something.
Mm-hmm.
It Bears, would Grodes. Be. Bears.
Bears. By the way, my Super Bowl prediction, Bears.
Well, no, Grody's going to come on the next segment. He's going to predict every NFL postseason award. So hang with us.
That's what we're going to do with that.
Also, Mr. Mister is another band with
Rolling Stones.
Yeah. Duran Duran.
Oh, you're killing it right now. Yeah, keep going. You're winning this category.
That was a Twitch mob. I went back and said Twitch mob was on it. Lisa Lisa and the Cult Jam. There we go.
So good. Uh-huh. So good. I love
There's a documentary about them.
Lost in Emotion.
Although, I believe Cult Jam is upset. No, Full Force is upset because they're not a part of this documentary because they played a big role in Lisa Lisa's career.
Hmm.
And they're like, that's funny how we weren't a part of the documentary. But, it bees like that sometimes. Grody, you're the man.
Yes. How can I be the man when you're the man? How is that possible, Lawrence and Matt? You guys have a great day. Always a pleasure
talking
to you.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Gotta take me a beer.